Today is Friday, May 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up.
Based on the reports that are coming out of the negotiations that are taking place between the Chinese vice premier as well as the trade representative from the United States, there is some indication that the Chinese are backtracking on some of the commitments that they have been making.
That's VOA Midwest correspondent Kane Farabaugh. We'll have more on U.S.-China trade coming up. Also ahead, Venezuela's opposition leader says he is open to accept U.S. military intervention to help manage the political emergency in his country. And Syrian government forces reportedly have captured at least three towns from Islamic militias. It's all on today's International Edition. While the United States has increased tariffs from 10% to 25% on $200 billion worth of Chinese imports, China today said it deeply regrets the increased tariffs and will take the necessary countermeasures. Without giving any details, the increases are going into effect in the midst of talks between Chinese Vice Premier Li He, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, and U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. To find out how the increased tariffs could affect the U.S. agriculture industry, I spoke with VOA's Midwest correspondent Kane Farabaugh.
Based on the reports that are coming out of the negotiations that are taking place between the Chinese vice premier as well as the trade representative from the United States, there is some indication that the Chinese are backtracking on some of the commitments that they have been making through earlier rounds of this long negotiation process, at least based on President Trump's tweets. There is some impatience with this perceived backtracking. So this latest round of increasing the tariffs from 10% to 25% on certain imported Chinese goods is a reaction to that perceived backtracking.
What do these tariffs mean for America's agriculture industry?
The immediate response last year when these tariffs went into place on imported aluminum and steel was to place tariffs on U.S. grain products. So that's soybean and corn. China is one of the biggest importers of U.S. grain products, particularly soybeans. So when there is a tariff imposed on that, it affects the ability for U.S. farmers to competitively sell their products to the Chinese market. So that means that Chinese importers then start to look at other markets, and they've been looking at Brazil and Argentina to buy their soybeans. So that leaves U.S. grain producers here at a disadvantage. And many of these farmers in the United States are experiencing economic decline over the last 6 years. You know, the cost to put this product into the ground for them is increasing, and they depend on markets to be able to make that money back. And when they have or lose access to a market like China or aren't as competitive in the Chinese market, it means that their soybean prices are going to drop. So farmers last year saw, you know, soybeans decrease anywhere from $1 to $2 a bushel of soybeans. When you're looking for that to depend on your bottom line, that's a dramatic cost decrease for them. Some of the farmers I've actually talked to this year have indicated that because of this uncertainty that's been created in the Chinese market, some of them are actually not even planning to plant soybeans. They're going to exclusively plant corn in the hopes that they'll be able to depend on money at the end of the year when they're harvesting. The key here for farmers, they need certainty. They need to be able to depend on China to be a market where they can sell their products. They need to make sure that there's a trade agreement in place. While many of them, I think, largely probably support President Trump's efforts here to negotiate a trade deal, many of them say these negotiations cannot go on indefinitely and they can't last too long without there being some major impact to their income, their bottom line. And also they're worried about the reputation of U.S. grain products in China.
And China has also said they were going to take countermeasures against this increase in tariffs. So what does that mean?
U.S. farmers are concerned that means it's going to be an increase on the tariffs for the grain products. But right now it's uncertain as to what China is going to do. These tariffs that are being imposed or increased from 10% to 25%, they focus largely on telecommunications equipment, metal furniture, even computer parts, some car parts. These are in the top 10 U.S. imports from China. So these are the things that are going to see the most dramatic price increases. And so what that would mean for a U.S. consumer is it means that perhaps their iPhones or their smartphones may cost more. Certain car repairs may cost more. Certain goods that they might buy in a department store would cost more. Those are the things that we're certain about would increase from 10% to 25%. Now, what's going to happen on the other end of this regarding the Chinese retaliation, at least at this point on Friday at 9 o'clock a.m., it's still uncertain what the Chinese are going to do.
That's VOA Midwest correspondent Kane Farabaugh speaking with me from Chicago, Illinois. Among the top stories in the world, the U.S. Abraham Lincoln Aircraft Carrier Strike Group and four B-52 bombers have arrived in the Middle East after concerns Iran may be planning an attack against American targets. South Africa's storied African National Congress is set to win and retain power for the sixth time in a row. And a Russian-born woman who posed as a German heiress to bilk banks, hotels, and friends out of hundreds of thousands of dollars will spend as much as 12 years in prison. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Eating a lot of certain foods may put you at a higher risk of cardiovascular disease, but a couple of new studies say when you eat could also affect your heart health. A new study published in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology provides further evidence that missing breakfast puts you at an increased risk of death due to heart disease. Another study of patients who were recently discharged from a hospital after being treated for a heart attack takes mealtimes a step further. Published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, the study suggests heart attack patients who skipped breakfast and ate dinner right before bedtime were also 4 to 5 times more likely to die, have another heart attack, or experience angina. Study authors suggested at least a 2-hour break between dinner and bedtime. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, the United States has increased tariffs from... Well, Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido said today he is open to accepting U.S. military intervention to help manage the political emergency in his country. If the Americans were to propose a military intervention, I would probably accept it, he said in an interview with Italian daily newspaper La Stampa. Two Venezuelan lawmakers sought refuge at foreign embassies in Caracas yesterday as the government of President Nicolas Maduro cracked down on Guaido's allies who supported his attempted uprising last week. Well, for more on the situation in Venezuela, we have here in the studio my colleague Brian Padden. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure.
So what is the situation right now in Venezuela?
Well, you know, the big question resides around the opposition leader Juan Guaido. He remains free, at least for now, although 10 of his colleagues, fellow lawmakers with the National Assembly, have either been charged with treason, one has been arrested, and a couple have, as you said, sought sanctuary in embassies there. So, you know, the question is, why doesn't the government arrest the leader of the opposition, Juan Guaido? Speaking to analysts here in the Washington, D.C. area, who are very knowledgeable of what's going on, you know, the word I get back is that they're concerned about what the international reaction would be, and particularly this threat of U.S. military force. Mike Pence this week said there would be consequences if anything happened to Juan Guaido. On the other hand, we're hearing this week that President Trump himself has voiced concern about the hawkish views of some of his top security advisors.
So what is Maduro, what is his next step at this point?
Right now, Maduro is, as was predicted by some analysts, he is resorting to increased repression to try to crack down on opponents, arresting opposition leaders, and then also trying to rally popular support by blaming the U.S. for the economic crisis in his country, even though the U.S. sanctions on the oil industry that will make it more difficult for the country to purchase food and medicine from abroad, those sanctions were put in place just recently. And the hyperinflation, the food shortages, the exodus of millions of Venezuelans, that has been going on for years.
And also looking at the humanitarian situation, what do they want to happen right now?
There is a great divide there happening right now. The humanitarian crisis continues. It's a major issue. I think people are divided over what should be done. They're very open to food aid. You know, there's an outside European group that is trying to negotiate a settlement for perhaps setting up elections in the future to resolve this issue. But for now, there's a bit of a standoff. The U.S. has offered international humanitarian aid, although it has been done in a bit of a confrontational manner and in support of the opposition. There have been some calls for the U.S. to supply food and medicine aid through the Red Cross and other non-political mechanisms.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for providing us with that insight into the situation. That's VOA's Brian Patton, who's joining me here in the studio. Well, Syrian government forces reportedly have captured at least three towns from Islamic militias, which control portions of the country's northwest between Idlib and Hama. Arab media also report the government was battling its adversaries in an effort to capture parts of the country's main highway that runs from Damascus to Aleppo. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Arab media broadcast amateur video of heavy Russian airstrikes in the northwest of Syria as government forces advance, recapturing the towns of Kafr Nabuda and Kalat al-Madik. Rami Abdul Rahman of the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights told Arab media that government forces have recaptured at least five small towns, including Kafr Nabuda and Kalat al-Madik. He says there have been hundreds of airstrikes over these areas during the past 10 days and that at least 100 civilians were killed. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV is saying the number of civilians that were killed was even higher, adding that more than 100 opposition fighters also were killed, in addition to close to 120 government soldiers and allied militiamen. The TV showed video of civilians fleeing from the areas that were being bombed using farm vehicles and other transportation to escape. Arab media interviewed families that said they were camped out under olive trees to avoid airstrikes and shelling in their villages. Syrian government analyst Ali Maksoud told State TV the battle for Idlib is coming to a head and that a military solution to the conflict appears to be on the horizon. He says the political decision appears to have been made to put an end to the pockets of terrorism around Idlib and that the government is no longer willing to compromise and allow terrorist groups to operate there. Amateur video showed government soldiers inside the town of Kafr Nabuda asserting they either would capture or destroy their enemies. The Syrian opposition's chief negotiator, Nasser al-Hariri, told journalists Thursday in the Turkish town of Ghazi Aintab, the government offensive advance on opposition-held regions makes a mockery of the entire negotiating process that Russia has been conducting in Astana and Sochi. He says his read of the situation is that what is taking place is a total breach of the Sochi Accords between Russia and Turkey regarding war crimes and the concept of a military victory. He says it makes a mockery of every agreement that has been reached in both Geneva and Astana. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA the Syrian government has been pursuing a military victory in Syria from the very beginning of the conflict, and things now seem to be evolving in that direction. He says the Assad regime has been trying to achieve a military victory from the outset and that all the de-escalation zones that were set up by the Astana process were just an illusion to mask the eventuality the government would try to recapture those zones. He argues that both Russia and Turkey allowed extremists to set up shop in these zones, providing an excuse to cover military operations there. The Syrian government says rebel forces have been shelling civilians in the towns and cities that it controls, including Aleppo, while the opposition forces claim Russia and the Syrian government have been bombing civilians in areas that it controls. Arab media reports the United Nations Security Council is due to meet Friday to discuss the situation in northern Syria behind closed doors. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
This is VOA's International Edition.
On the next edition of Encounter, we'll examine the current situation in Libya, where an opposition force is challenging a UN-recognized government. Ambassador Jonathan Weiner from the Middle East Institute and Graham Bannerman from the Middle East Institute and U.S. Institute of Peace joins guest host and VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young for the discussion. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Following a diplomatic tour in Europe by Libyan Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj, France reaffirmed its support for the UN-recognized government of national accord in Libya and called for an unconditional ceasefire. Italy and Germany did almost the same. But Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi met Libyan National Army Commander Khalifa Haftar in Cairo and reaffirmed his support for Haftar's efforts to combat terrorism to achieve stability in Libya. Rhiannon Smith is the managing editor of the Libya Analysis Consulting Firm in London. She spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Elshenawy about the conflicting messages from the international community.
These words don't actually mean very much. With the French statement, typically more recently, France has been backing Haftar, has been seen to be supporting his advance on the capital. And actually, what was very interesting after Sarraj met with Macron in France is the GNA actually issued a statement revoking the ability of Total, which is France's main oil company in Libya, to stop working. And this has been seen by many as an attempt to kind of pressure France to take a stronger stance against Haftar. In the statement that was made, although France said it supported a ceasefire, is they didn't say that Haftar and his forces must return to the positions that they held before the 4th of April, so before they moved on the capital. So actually, many of these calls for ceasefires now are seen by the GNA as brushing, as tarring both the GNA forces and the LNA forces with the same brush, calling them all militias, calling for them all to stop the fighting. And so the GNA and Sarraj is not happy with this, and they still want stronger international support specifically for the GNA against Haftar, and they don't look like they're going to get that.
About Sisi's reaffirmation of his support to Haftar's efforts to eradicate terrorism and install stability in Libya.
I think Sisi's statement and the Egyptian meeting between Haftar and Sisi shows that Egypt and as well the UAE are still strongly supporting Haftar's move. And if Haftar is able to continue getting political support from Egypt as well as potentially more material support for its forces on the ground, it seems unlikely that he's going to stop his advance anytime soon, and he will continue to push until Haftar will come out on top. And I think that's really what he's pushing for, and it's much more likely that he will be able to do that if he's getting kind of international support from his key allies, which he does see it still seem to be doing.
The United Nations and the African Union have joined in calling for an urgent mobilization by the international community to send out a unified and strong message on the need for an immediate ceasefire in Libya. Does that mean a convergence of positions that could change the division in the Security Council?
Unfortunately, I don't think it will lead to too much of a change in the UN Security Council on Libya. Although a lot of European nations have come out and are continuing to sort of say they support the GNA, they're calling for a ceasefire. They have been doing this the whole time. And actually, these words don't really mean anything without any action. And I think the divisions between some of the countries on the UN Security Council over whether they should be supporting Haftar, supporting the GNA, or more the position trying to take a neutral stance, which means it upsets, you know, both LNA and the GNA in Tripoli. I think, unfortunately, we're unlikely to see much changing on the international approach to Libya until things on the ground change and sort of a party comes out on top, unfortunately.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of Libya Analysis in London, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. Well, a record 41.3 million people were uprooted within their own countries last year due to conflicts and violence. Data show today was two-thirds displaced in just 10 countries, including Syria, Colombia, and Somalia. Alexandra Bilak, director of the Internal Displacement Monitoring Center, said the increase in internally displaced people, which was 1 million higher than in 2017, suggests that more global crises were long-lasting. Unresolved internal displacement has all sorts of knock-on effects, one of them being that IDPs today could become refugees tomorrow, she told the Thomson Reuters Foundation. Well, share prices for ride services pioneer Uber Technologies dropped at the start of trading today, its first day on the New York Stock Exchange. When trading began about 2 hours ago, the price dropped to just $42, down from its initial listing price of $45. Uber is the world's largest ride-hailing service. Although the initial share price valued the company at nearly $82 billion, the company has never made a profit, and Uber executives say it may be years before it does. Well, you've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, and our engineer, Joe Gill. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.